This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 22nd of June, 2012. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 22nd of June 2012, which this week has been edited by Janet Farthing and Diana Hampton. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. So let's have a look at what's on. Well, we have got the Hampshire Open Gardens, and they've got two events at Swanmore on the 24th of June, and that's from 6 to 10. And it's beautiful summer gardens, and the cost is going to be £5, which includes car parking and the use of a hop-on, hop-off minibus for those that don't wish to use their cars. And also, there's another date, the 29th of July, same time, 6 to 10, same place. If you want tickets, they're available from 12:30 at the Paterson Centre, S0322PA. And if you want more details, if you telephone John Sharp, he's on 01489 892 750. That's 01489 892 750. You're probably aware that the Winchester Hat Fair is on from the 6th to the 8th of July, and it'll be street theatre at its best, in the streets and in the squares of the city, and they'll be all around with their costumes and shouting around, I expect. Also, we have the Best of British Festival in 2012. We're very proud to be marking the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. And during the festival, visitors to King Alfred's ancient capital can catch an array of events starring some of the greatest names in British theatre, broadcasting, literature, politics and the military. There'll be music, dancing, street parties, children's activities and a series of foodie events and promotions celebrating local produce. If you want more details about that, there's a website, www.bestofbritishfestival.com. That's www.bestofbritishfestival.com, and they will give you a full list of events. And finally, for the local ones, there's the Winchester Chamber Orchestra Summer Concert. That's at the 30th of this month, 30th of June 2012, at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, Winchester. And that's telephone number for that. That's 01962860. And a variety of things available for there. So if you just phone for details, please. There is a website, but unfortunately it's not been given to me. But also in the Mayflower Theatre, looking ahead in advance, we have got the Gershwins' Porgy and Bess, and that's performed by the acclaimed Cape Town Opera, and that's from 4th to the 7th of July 2012. And for more details, there's the box office number of the Mayflower. That's 02380 711 811, or you can book online at www.mayflower.org.uk. And that's all of our what's on. Just to tell you about the lighting up time, which ends on Friday the 22nd of June at 4:51 a.m. and it begins at 9:25 p.m. in the evening. And on Wednesday the 27th of June, it ends at 4:53 a.m. and begins at 9:25 a.m. again. Sometimes you have problems with your memory stick, and if you do, there's a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826, and she will then send you a replacement. Now, please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player, before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged. Several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. Now we're going to the front page headlines, and this week we have two. One is City's £50 million blueprint for new homes. And the second one is France's recurring rabbits. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please? Shirley.
City's £50 million blueprint for new homes. First council houses built in 20 years. Civic chiefs have revealed where long-awaited council homes will be built in Winchester over the next 3 years. The council will spend more than £9 million on 99 homes across the district by 2015. It is part of a £50 million plan for 300 new homes over the next 10 years to tackle a waiting list of 4,400 people. Details were included in a report to Cabinet last Wednesday. It comes after the Homes and Communities Agency revealed the extent of the challenge in cutting waiting lists. It said that in 2011-12, just 12 affordable homes were started in the district, down from 92 in 2010-11. The decline is reflected in the figures for Eastleigh, 131 and 79, in Test Valley, 323 and 218, and Southampton, 296 and 31. Across Hampshire, the figure dropped from 1,387 to 476. In the Winchester district, 31 homes are proposed for this year, including the purchase of 15 homes at Bath Place from Southern Housing Group, and the development of other sites in surrounding villages. Council leader Keith Wood said, "We are anxious to get this moving quickly. It's accepted it's a difficult thing to get going because the council has not built houses for 20 years. Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for New Homes Delivery, said, "This is a wonderful position for this council to be in. It's a great privilege, an initiative that has support from every single member of the council." The council has earmarked £100,000 to carry out ecological surveys before putting in planning applications. Chief Executive Simon Eden said some staff would be reassigned to manage the project, but no additional staff would be recruited at this stage. Meanwhile, the Joseph Rowntree Foundation has reported that more people into their 30s will be forced to remain at home with their parents.
And let's have the second front page headline, please, Peter.
Yes, and it's titled France's Recurring Rabbits. An unsettling experience waited visitors to Hampshire Degree Show. They found themselves seated next to an unexpected companion, a mannequin, wearing a large cat's head. As if that wasn't surprising enough, projected on the screen at the front of the Lecture Theatre B at Winchester School of Art Degree Show was an image of the theatre filled with similar creatures. The piece at Park Avenue Campus was created by Emily Miller, 21, of Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, and may leave audiences perplexed. Just the response she wants. Another artwork hard to miss is Francis West's rabbit mural entitled Ralph Recurring. The mural consists of a series of identical rabbits and runs along the outer wall of the campus's west side building. The show featured pieces of fine art and textile design, as well as fashion exhibits and graphic art. And this piece is accompanied by two photographs. One is of the large cat's head, and I have to say the cat has a very startled look on its face. And the second is a photograph of Frances West next to one of her rabbit artworks. The rabbit is drawn as big as she is, but the rabbit, as befits the weather, is drawn carrying an umbrella.
Thank you. And that's all we have for the front page headlines this week. Now, we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Your Say, Westminster Diary, historical items, first person, and chronicle comment. And I shall begin with the death notices. Broadway, Edna Jean Broadway, at Abbott Spartan Care Home, aged 88. Dawson, Betty C.L. Dawson, peacefully aged 89. Dunstan, Reginald John Dunstan. Elvin, Robert Philip Elvin, suddenly aged 59. Gatfield, Edward Noel Gatfield, aged 91 after a short illness. Hurd, Frieda Hurd, aged 82. Knowles, Godfrey Nelson Knowles, peacefully at home, aged 81. Pass, Dennis Keith Pass, peacefully at Southampton General Hospital, aged 85. Petty, Lillian Grace Petty, at Hawthorne Court Nursing Home, aged 91. Phillips, Claire Edith Ney Martin Phillips, peacefully at Abbott Spartan Care Home, aged 90. Savage, Frieda Agnes Savaged, at Brackenley Rest Home, aged 95. Smith, Don Smith, at home, unexpectedly, aged 78. Veneer, Millicent Olive Veneer, peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 96. And now, it's time for Christian comment, read by Shirley.
Right, this is written by Canon Rowley Ream. And it's headed Learning and Participation. Anyone fortunate enough to win a grant from the Heritage Lottery Fund, HLF, has to show the real difference that the money will make, not just to existing, but to new audiences. The work to secure the cathedral's full HLF grant has recently begun, but the mentality about sharing whatever we have has always been part of church life. Ultimately, it goes back to the desire of the Good Shepherd to seek and find others beyond his original flock. The Church of England's parish system enshrines the principle that no one stands outside its concern, but, in fact, churches of all denominations are invested in serving and blessing others, whether believers or not. The focus of HLF's concern is increased learning and participation. Having more people involved in their heritage, making active use of it, involved in taking decisions about it, rather than it being presented to them on a plate. We all hope for some sort of summer between now and October. But soon, autumn days will be upon us. With them comes a spectacular heritage event at the cathedral. Winchester Chronicles of Light. It is most definitely not an old-fashioned light and sound show where people come to sit passively. It is designed to reach new audiences and for them to participate in the show as actively as possible. A cast of 40 local actors has been assembled, from teenagers to retired people. They will be involved in the live performance. No one who auditioned has been excluded. We have recruited 90 sidesmen to ensure a warm welcome for everyone who comes. 7 schools from around Hampshire have been involved by the County Music Service in live performance, and pupils from three other schools, along with their families, are currently making a large book of stories, one of the chief props in the show. Alex Hoare, a local artist, is helping them to make collages using text, photographs, drawings, and interesting papers. This will then be bound together and kept after the show as a legacy object. The producers have often thought how much easier it would have been to record a package to roll out night by night. This would have been much quicker and cheaper, but limited participation to a passive audience and to those already had an interest in this kind of entertainment. Instead, there will be many more people around Hampshire who will be able to say, "I belong to that event and I'm proud of what we achieved together."
We've got 13 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Peter.
Yes, his first letter is written by Richard Stobart, and it's headed "Democratic Deficit Was Inevitable." It was good to read Chronicle, June the 7th, from the Hants chairman of the Conservative Party, that members of the public who pre-registered could attend Saturday's, that's June the 16th, beauty parade of candidates for the post of police commissioner and vote for their preference. Commendably, it seems only the Tories have made at least a show of public consultation in their convoluted selection process. The other parties have yet to show their hands. The difficulties faced by cash-strapped political parties contesting elections in small parliamentary constituencies are only too obvious when they are required to cope with a constituency of about a million electors. The Hampshire MPs who voted for this clumsy feature of the Police Reform Act are to blame. A serious democratic deficit was inevitable. We can only hope that the rest of the legislation about party political police commissioners was considered with more attention to its consequences. That letter was from Richard Stobart from Bournefields, Twyford.
Here's a letter about the new leisure centre. "Sensible to invest in a new facility. You recently published a letter which asked whether Winchester needed a new leisure centre. I strongly believe the answer is a resounding yes. Without even getting on my own hobby horse about the inadequate court facilities for safe and competitive netball, there are several wider issues. Many sports clubs struggle to gain access to facilities, often having to travel far to train and compete. Even those lucky enough to access a local facility often have to compromise in terms of the length of time they are allowed access for, the quality of the venue itself, and the ability to book more than once a week in order to expand their club size and increase participation. While a new leisure centre might not be able to accommodate all of the people all of the time, it could provide specialist facilities for those sports which are not provided for. Its existence would also reduce the strain on existing facilities. River Park, while having invested in an updated gym fairly recently, is never going to be the state-of-the-art facility Winchester deserves. From what we hear, its carbon footprint is Yeti-like, and the millions that will be needed to invest in just to maintain its current inadequate level of provision seems misguided. Surely it makes more sense to invest in a new facility which meets the needs of the community, is energy efficient, sustainable, and has longevity. The obesity epidemic and its health problems, alongside a growing elderly population, mean that investment in sport and leisure has never been more important. If Winchester has the opportunity to fight for such new facilities through supporting campaigns such as Winchester Fit for the Future, then they will have my support." And that's from Joe Beatty, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock.
And this one from Barbara A. Hall. And it's headed "Echoes of Gloriana in Hyde Abbey." "Sir, during the recent Diamond Jubilee celebrations, the Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden had cause to take a particular interest in the river pageant. The lead boat, the beautiful row barge Gloriana, a Canaletto-inspired design commissioned by Lord Stirling, was built by Mark Edwards in his Richmond boathouse. In 2005, Mark and his lads made the bridge and the yew chapel benches for Hyde Abbey Garden, modelled on two ancient benches in the cathedral. For Gloriana, they worked long hours to get the barge, first of its kind for 200 years, ready in time. On the Sunday evening, ITV showed an all-too-brief clip of them engaged in its construction. Hyde Abbey Garden has also featured in the recently published Led by the Hand by Kim Wilkie, a beautiful volume and a pleasure to hold in one's hand, describing his many and varied landscape projects. It makes us realise anew how lucky we are to have one of his designs here on our doorstep for all to enjoy. Barbara A. Hall, King Alfred Place, Hyde, Winchester. This one by David Drake, entitled Wind of Change. Sir, it is ironic that in the week the media are briefed on the Olympics opening ceremony, which will feature our green and pleasant land, the Hampshire Chronicle should have a lead story, June the 14th, on an application to build 17 wind turbines in Hampshire. David Drake, Lupin Gardens, Winchester.
And the next letter is written by Derek Pickett, and it's headed Plebeians Can't Do Without Their Circus. Sir, on behalf of Bolsheviks and other lost causes, may I complain about the amount of sentimentality over Her Majesty's Diamond Jubilee celebrations, broken only by the BBC's astonishingly inane coverage that served the spontaneity of the people and, in particular, the glorious Thames pageant so poorly. The point that is perhaps overlooked is that, with the much-loved Queen above politics but under the law and the armed forces loyal to the Crown, our constitutional monarchy is well protected and stable. But we are not protected from our own stupidity. An estimated 500,000 people will be searched during the Olympics, and with enough surveillance cameras to reach the moon, surely we must see something is fundamentally wrong. Why on earth did we not forego the Olympic extravaganza and invest time, money and above all honesty to find out why British people wish to kill other British people, and then do something about it to bring this nonsense to a halt, leaving some other nation to hold the games and pick up the enormous tab? But the plebeians want their circus, and amongst these seething masses I have a friend who intends to watch the magnificent Usain Bolt for 9.58 seconds, then switch over for the next 2 weeks and gaze on an effulgent parade of lithe, long-limbed, leaping ladies engaged in beach volleyball. Now there's £14,000,000 well spent. It's from Derek Pickett, Ashtree Road, Andover.
Return to sender. I'm sure that if David Bucket loaded up his tractor with the fly-tip rubbish dumped at his field entrance and delivered it back to the Southampton address on the abandoned bank statements and other documents, there would be no shortage of officials only too happy to arrest and prosecute him for the same offence. That was in Chronicle Country Watch, June the 14th, and it's from Christine Hartridge, West Street, Hambledon.
And this one is from somebody who calls himself Rat Watcher, and the letter's headed Feed the Birds and Feed the Rats Too. Sir, I was interested to read your report on the rat population in Winchester, Chronicle, June the 7th. I live at Teg Down and consider myself a gardener with the interests of wildlife at heart, avoiding the use of sprays and insecticides whilst encouraging birds, bees and amphibians into the garden. I have a well-stocked pond, borders planted with open flowers for bees and butterflies, a wildflower area and an enclosed compost heap, for I never leave rubbish lying around. Until recently, I had numerous feeding stations to encourage birds, But that's not all they encouraged, since the bird table became a stop-off point for a large local rat. I accepted this as part of living in a semi-rural area, but over time, Roland put the word around and invited his friends and relations to party at our place, using the feeders as the rat version of Walton Towers. I called it a day when, early one morning, I counted a dozen or so of his chums rampaging through the garden. They were sitting on the bird table, hanging from coconuts and balancing from the feeders. When they'd scoffed the birdseed, the cheekiest came up to the windows, just stopping short of knocking and asking, Oliver-like, for more. All this was taking place outside, while our cat slept blissfully unaware on the sofa, probably dreaming of catching mice. For the sake of our neighbours and my own sanity, I had to call on Eddie the rat catcher, who asked almost immediately whether we were feeding the birds. He told us, "Stop, take away their food source and they'll go elsewhere." I heeded his advice, and after a few more visits, Roland and his chums vacated. Sadly, they are back using my garden as a rat run. We are now carefully putting down our own poison. But what is the answer? How do we rid ourselves of these horrid pests? Any suggestions would be welcome. Rat catcher, name and address supplied. Take down, Winchester.
The next letter is from Dr. Michael Bennett, and it's headed Keep Leisure Centre at Heart of the City. Sir, there seems to be a constant drip of support for closing River Park Leisure Centre and replacing it with a new centre, including an Olympic pool at Bar End. It's a very bad idea. I'm sure the suggestion that the leisure centre will vacate a valuable piece of land will cause housing developers to salivate at the thought. I can also understand why Winchester University sees a new leisure centre as a jewel in the crown. That's from Chronicle, June the 14th. As an Olympic pool will be used to make a place on a Winchester degree course seem even more attractive. I also appreciate that a few families, hoping one of their number is going to excel at swimming, will be happy to have such a pool on their doorstep. But none of this suggests that this proposal is good for the majority of citizens. The position of River Park in the middle of Winchester and adjacent to the Itchen, a skate park, a playground and playing fields is crucial. A visit can often be combined with a visit to the shops. Given the central position, many people simply walk to the leisure centre. My family, from three addresses in Winchester, have had the benefit of walking there over the last 30 years. If you move this facility, you will have to agree with teenagers who complain there is nothing for them in the city centre. By putting a new centre on the outskirts, you will make more people get into cars and exclude many others. Clearly, the current centre needs updating, but the idea that it must be closed for reasons of environmental sustainability is unconvincing. A major reason why cars are seen as essential in Winchester is that the two biggest supermarkets on the outskirts, at Badger Farm and at Winnell, to place the main leisure centre at Bar End would just increase the traffic jams and fumes. A great place to live is not just made up of houses and shops. River Park Leisure Centre is a great asset for the community's health, and fun should remain at the heart of the city. That's from Dr. Michael Bennett, Fordington Road, Winchester.
Extreme weather, just the norm now. I think this is a timely moment to remind all about the farce of global warming stroke climate change, as the alarmists rely on a constant drip of unfounded press and media releases to influence the public. The latest is, as they would have you believe, disastrous weather. Now let me think. During the 1970s and 80s, I lived on the Kent-Surrey border. During that time, Eden Bridge, Kent, was under 12 feet of water for 2 weeks, Sadly, where I worked was on high ground, so no time off. I twice had to come back from annual holidays in Cornwall, once because it was too hot, and once because of constant torrential rain and floods. And let's not forget the hurricane, which downed 3 million trees, nor the long dry spell and the subsequent forest and heathland fires, which raged for 3 weeks. I seem to recall a headline, "The Southeast of England on Fire." In 1988, I moved to Hampshire, maybe a more stable area for weather. No. In the next 5 years, more torrential rain and floods, and a second hurricane, another 500,000 trees down. Or maybe I'm just unlucky. Malcolm Wright, Winchester City Councillor, Goldfinch Way, South Wanston.
And this one from Sue White, headed, "Paying the Price of Bad Dentistry." Sir, I was very interested to read your article about damages awarded to the Horsford lady through negligence by Jonathan Drummond of the Berukin Dental Practice in Horsford, chronicled June the 7th. I too had problems with my teeth, having seen Mr. Drummond for several years. In 2006, he had signed me off as dentally fit, but I was not at all happy, as I felt I had infections in my mouth and gums. Because of this, I presented to my current dentist at St. Cross, who was very unhappy with my teeth. I needed a lot of work to bring them to an acceptable standard. Several root canal fillings and replacement of old fillings and badly made and fitted crowns. All in all, this cost me well over £4,500. I needed 24 appointments, but now have a mouth free of infections and feel much better about my teeth. I feel lucky my dentist, Susan Fenton, is passionate about her work and confident she is looking after me in a proper way. You only have one set of teeth, and bad dentistry can add to their demise. We put our trust in our dentist, but when his standards are so low, it is very disappointing. Both my husband and I attended Mr. Drummond, and, latterly, every time we came away with minor mouth infections. It was this that first alerted me to the fact that things were not right with him. Sue White, Kilmerston, Horsford.
And that is the end of our letters to the editor. Thank you for all of our contributors. And now it's time for your say. We asked, should doctors be allowed to strike over their pensions, and should their pay be docked if they do? Well, Andy Salter, who's 36 and he's an architect of Legion Lane, Kingsworthy, said they should be allowed to strike because they have the right to, and there are other options like hospitals. I don't think it's right for them to be docked pay, because if they feel they have a genuine grievance, it's only right that they strike. Faith Rose, 27, an executive assistant of Church Lane, West Meon, said they should not be allowed to strike. They earn more than an average person already, and they have a duty of care to people. They should lose their pay too. People lose their jobs over strikes, so why should doctors keep their pay? And Vicky Bateman, 22, a trainee teacher of Jury Street, said they should be allowed to strike as long as it does not affect patients and appointments too much. Their pay depends on the situation, but if I went on strike, I wouldn't be paid, so why should they? And finally, Will Foley, 24, a Hampshire County Council employee of Grange Close, St Cross, said, I can understand people feeling hard done by due to changes in their pensions, but everyone is in the same boat. I wouldn't say it's fair for them to keep their pay, but fairness seems unattainable in industrial action nowadays. And now, Peter has Westminster Diary for us, don't you, Peter?
I do, and Westminster Diary is written this week by George Hollingbury, who's the MP for the Meon Valley. The government has committed itself to a radical and very welcome change in the way that the state pension will work, with many women getting more and the whole system getting much simpler. The change comes in the form of a new parliamentary bill proposing a single flat rate payment for anyone reaching pensionable age from 2015. The level will be set at £140 a week in today's money and will grow with inflation. It has been set at the amount someone with little in the way of savings is entitled to now if they claim all the top-ups available. The change allows for everyone to know exactly what to expect and not to have to worry about whether saving up for old age will count against the state pension they might receive. Importantly, the move will get rid of a raft of fiendishly complex, surrounded jargon like SERPs and then S2P, contracting out, additional pensions, appropriate personal pensions, stakeholder pensions. Sadly, the list is endless. There are also a few other things that you need to know, most of it reassuring. First, anyone who has built up an extra pension pot in the state system will have it honoured in full. Second, this is for everyone, whatever their work history, and so it is particularly beneficial for women who often have an interrupted employment when they have children, and for the self-employed. Third, and this is the wrinkle, it will only be available to those retiring after the implementation date. The old system, with all its complexities, will remain in place for those who retire earlier, even by a day, and I have no doubt that my postbag will bulge for a while with letters from those affected. All in all, though, this change has to be right. A predictable state pension that allows people to save for their old age with confidence about what they will receive must be a good thing.
Now we're going back through the years and through the files for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Shirley.
25 years ago, 1987. Job vacancies for young people notified to county careers offices in Hampshire have risen by more than 30%. The total number notified in May was 635, compared to the total for April of 434, an increase of 31%. The May figure represents an increase of nearly 38% on the vacancy total for May 1986. The number of young people registered as seeking work rose slightly in May as school leavers joined the labour market. The total for May was 2,329 against the April figure of 2,216. Just 3 weeks before the annual Hat Fair, the organisers have been told they cannot hold the usual street party in the Broadway. The last-minute blow was delivered on Monday by Winchester's Traffic Management Subcommittee, when councillors refused to make an order closing the Broadway to traffic. Shocked organisers of the fair are now desperately trying to get permission to hold the street party outside the city's law courts.
Let's go back 50 years ago now, please, Peter.
50 years ago was 1962. Hampshire County Council is to operate a welfare grant scheme to meet the urgent needs of cancer patients being nursed at home. The scheme was approved at Winchester on Tuesday by the Council's Health Committee, and an initial grant of £50 to purchase special items has already been received from the founders of the scheme, the Marie Curie Memorial Foundation. The departure of the Royal Hampshire Regiment from their island garrison in the West Indies has not only ended a 307-year-old military link between Britain and Jamaica, but has also culminated in an enormous fund of goodwill between the two countries. Leaving the Caribbean as the last British unit to serve in the Indies, the 1st Battalion was remembered last week through Brigadier G.D. Brown, Colonel of the Regiment, who brought the good wishes of the island to the annual reunion of the Comrades Association.
And I'm going back 100 years ago, 1912. On Thursday, a very successful sale of work and meeting under the auspices of the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel was held at Wolsey Church House, Winchester, when the Reverend J. Jones, late sub-dean of Thursday Island in the Diocese of Carpentaria, gave an eloquent address on the work of the church in Northern Australia. Both sale and meeting were to be held in the deanery garden, but the uncertain weather suggested the spacious rooms at Wolsey offered admirable accommodation. And the second item is, the Council of the City of Winchester, having applied to the local government board for leave to borrow £4,361 for the provision of a cemetery at Magdalen Down in the parish of Chilcombe, without, in the rural district of Winchester, the local government board directed an inquiry into the matter of the application, but no one attended in opposition, and little public interest was manifested.
And now, 200 years ago, 1812. Several men at Netherton, Offutt, Holmfirth and Horbury were robbed of their firearms on Saturday night. About 10 o'clock, a number of men with muskets were performing exercises at South Hill Wood. About 2 o'clock on Sunday morning, 47 of them passed through Gawthorpe, where they obtained guns and money. They knocked at the door of Mr. Israel Rhodes and demanded his gun, which he was obliged to surrender. At Marlborough Street, the Right Honourable Geoffrey Tierney charged Mr. Jeffreys, a bookseller, with assaulting him in Pall Mall. It appeared the prosecutor was in company with Lord Spencer when Mr. Jeffreys assailed him in the most affronting language and upbraided the noble lord with him. Prosecutor, to avoid the defendant, attempted to enter a shop in Pall Mall, but the defendant prevented it. It appeared Mr. Jeffreys had conceived that he had injured him in trade, but Mr. Tierney denied any such attempt.
Well, now we have First Person, which is written this week by George Hayter, and he's entitled it My Narrow Escape from Blair. The handle on the outside of our downstairs lavatory door has worked itself so loose that it regularly falls off. I'm tired of retightening the screws because they always work loose again. A few weeks ago, I used the loo, but when I tried to get out, the door wouldn't open. The handle on the other side had worked loose again, taking with it the spindle, which normally connects the handles on both sides, to the opening mechanism. The effect was to disconnect the handle on my side. I called out, and my wife let me out amid laughter. I mused that had she not been home, I would have been trapped for hours. You'd think I'd learn from my lesson, but yesterday the same thing happened. Only this time my wife had just left for work. It was 9:15 a.m. She wasn't due home until 6. I considered brute force, but I couldn't have kicked open the door as it opens inwards. I would have had to kick a hole through, and I wasn't yet that desperate. The window was an obvious option, but the opening part, though nearly 4 foot wide, is only 8.5 inches deep. What made the narrow aperture daunting was that it was 6 feet above the floor. Nevertheless, I climbed onto the windowsill. My head went through sideways, but when I tried to go through further, the plastic window frame dug into my chest. Had to be legs first, I thought. I got the left leg through, but my knee couldn't adopt the sideways right angle needed to get the right leg through. I've just turned 60 and didn't feel that these perilous aerial contortions were what I should be doing. I resign myself to a day reading Tony Blair's autobiography, which I'd been reading on the loo for 13 months. The claustrophobia hampered concentration on poor Tony, and I put the book down. If I could get the handle off this side, I wondered, was there any way I could activate the mechanism? I searched the bathroom. Shampoo lids, seashells, a knitting needle, all were investigated as potential screwdrivers, but none were workable. Should I shout for help? Better not. Don't get on with the neighbour on that side. I had another go headfirst. When my rib cage got stuck, I kept wriggling, feeling the plastic window bend. The weight of my body was on my chest, which felt like a plastic frame was cutting into it. I reached down and got my hands on the outside window sill and then onto the top of the lean-to log store beyond. If I get stuck like this, I've had it. Then, bum through. No problem. Feet through. No problem. I was free.
And it's time for the editorial comment read by Shirley.
And this is headed, The Real Human Cost of Social Care Cuts. How can 15 minutes to care for the elderly and infirm still living at home ever be enough? Government ministers haven't grasped the nettle and come up with a solution to the social care funding gap. Councils have to grapple with the huge challenge of supporting an ageing population whilst cutting public expenditure. Hampshire has driven down the fees it pays home care agencies. But how long can this go on? David Watt, chief executive of Nobilis Home Care, has warned that the system in Hampshire is at breaking point. Many smaller companies rely on local authority contracts for the majority of their work. Refusing to bid for council work would mean putting themselves out of business. So providers are faced with cutting costs by paying carers little more than the minimum wage and struggling with staff recruitment and retention. In a postcode lottery, Hampshire is among the councils with a minimum period of 15 minutes of care, with carers now electronically monitored to account for every minute. Despite providers' best intentions, the quality and dignity of care is threatened. This is the real human cost of cuts to social care budgets.
And now we're going to continue with items of general news, beginning with one read by Peter.
And it's titled Thrilled by Queen's Honours. The Queen's Birthday Honours has recognised a wide range of people for their public service. Myra Clare, 80, of Burriton Road, Hairstock, has been awarded a British Empire Medal for her 23-year service to charity group Parkinson's UK. Miss Clare, chairman of the Winchester branch for more than a decade, said, "I feel absolutely honoured. I'm thrilled to bits. I couldn't do the work without the help of those on the Winchester committee." David Howells, former Director of Corporate Services at Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, received the Queen's Fire Service Medal after 40 years of work. The dad of two from Winchester joined the service in 1973 and retired in January. He has also served as a magistrate, is a keen marathon runner and fundraiser, and will compete in the World Firefighter Games in Sydney later this year. Bishop's Sutton farmer, Peter Mills, has also been awarded a BME for 30 years' services to the Alresford Agricultural Show. Janice Waterman has also received a BME, having run Scouts and Cub groups in King Somborne for nearly 40 years. Anne Marley, from Bishopstoke, who retired from Hampshire County Council last December after 10 years as the head of Children's, Youth and School Library Services, has been honoured with an MBE. She moved to Hampshire in 1984 and has been involved in many initiatives locally and nationally, including book fairs, festivals, awards ceremonies and campaigns that have promoted reading. She said, "This is such an honour and I'm quite overwhelmed and I'm very grateful that I have been nominated. Of course, this award isn't just about me. Throughout my career, I've worked as part of a team and it is the wonderfully dedicated staff in all areas of the library services who should share this with me, especially the professional children's and school librarians who work tirelessly to get the right book to the right reader at the right time."
Pop-up shop really looks the business. The recession has created a new type of entrepreneur, the pop-up shopkeeper. An Oxford couple who opened the city's first pop-up shop in the Brooks Centre in Winchester last year are now on their fourth incarnation. Graham and Susie Brown run the Urban Design pop-up shop in a prominent spot in the centre. Said Graham, "We couldn't manage the rent that the high street namesake have to pay. When empty sites come up, we offer to fill them until the landlord finds a full-time tenant. If we hadn't found this solution, we either couldn't do what we're doing or we'd have to do it on a much smaller scale, somewhere else. It's mutually beneficial because the centre looks better for having an attractive unit like this instead of the unit being sat empty while they look for new tenants. The pop-up shop concept is well established in London, but this is thought to be the first of its kind in Winchester. Graham is also an architect who until recently worked on a major project for Winchester firm Architecture PLB, while Susie is a designer of clothes and also the lampshades that fill the window. Karen Hawes, a spokesperson for the Brooks Centre, said, "It must attract people to the Brooks. Last year they had some unusual bikes in the window and people were coming into the centre to look through the window at them. So it's something of interest instead of an empty unit." The couple have changed sites within the centre four times and will be moving again in July. Under the arrangement, they pay a limited rental fee, but may only stay for 3 months. Graham said, "The downside is that because we keep moving, people won't immediately know where we are. If we're there for 3 months, we need a week to set up and a week to close down. But we're quite happy to be shifted around by landlords because that's the deal. But 14% of retail shops in the UK are empty, and this is a way they can be filled. There is a unit on the other side that has been sat empty since Christmas." He added, "This business model means that we can sell items by other makers and take a much smaller percentage. We just take what's necessary to cover electricity and basic overheads, but the maker takes 70% of the profit and we take 30%. And it's a lovely picture of both of them, that's Graham and Susie, and they're inside their unit and they've got lots of colourful things on this display.
Fresh plans due for new homes on pub site. Developers are making a renewed effort to demolish Stanmore's last pub. It comes after the new Queen's Head in Stanmore Lane closed in February and was boarded up a few weeks later. The leader of the campaign to save it has now said many residents have lost hope that it will ever trade again. Organiser Dave Sumption said, "A lot of people are now saying it's gone, it's shut, and we've lost it, and we've got to face the fact that money talks." The other pub on the estate, the Stanmore Hotel, was demolished 3 years ago to make way for a care home. If emerging plans are approved, the new Queen's Head will be replaced by housing and a convenience store. Mr. Sumption said, "Once again, we're going to get something on the estate that's neither wanted nor needed." He added that business was improving at the new Queen's Head in the months leading up to its closure. However, its owner, Enterprise Inns, argues that the venue is no longer viable. As a result, it has agreed to sell it to Fair Oak-based Pargate Homes, pending permission. The developer tried to build 14 homes there last summer, but Winchester City Council refused. Bargate appealed against the decision, but the planning inspectorate upheld the original ruling. The appeal was dismissed last month, and the company now plans to try again. Managing Director Angus Cook said they were drawing up a new scheme with housing and a convenience store. He confirmed that they were speaking to the council and a fresh application is expected later this year.
Going Japanese. Winchester is turning Japanese. The city's first Japanese restaurant, Kyoto Kitchen, has opened in Parchment Street with two lavish parties for invited guests. It is the third venture from restaurateur Miff Kayum, who also owns Bengal Sage and Bangkok Brasserie. Housed in the former premises of Palace Restaurant, Kyoto Kitchen includes a private dining room and a state-of-the-art kitchen suited for sushi preparation. Guests enjoyed champagne and sushi at the launch. And there is a photograph here of Miff Kayum and his wife, Surewa, and their son, Suleiman.
Home care system at breaking point. Calls to extend minimum 15-minute visits. Care of the elderly is being measured by the minute in Hampshire in a bid to save millions of pounds. The County Council has set a minimum period of 15 minutes to care for some pensioners living at home, including dementia sufferers. And in that brief time, carers may be expected to feed disabled OAPs and take them to the toilet. The Council has introduced a new electronic monitoring system which times when agency carers start and end home visits. Carers have to clock in by phoning from the home of an elderly person when they arrive and again when they leave. It will allow per-minute billing for care when fully implemented to save £3.2 million a year, with companies only paid for care actually delivered. But the new electronic monitoring system, costing about £400,000 a year, has been beset by problems and its rollout delayed. And David Watt, Chief Executive of Southampton-based Nobilis Home Care, has claimed the home care system is at breaking point. Currently, the County Council spends about £60 million on home care for 9,600 elderly people. Though it saved £4.9 million in 2011 to 2012 by capping the prices it pays for care, county chiefs claim the efficiency savings have no impact on the elderly, as they receive the same service for a lower price. But Mr. Watt, a board member of Hampshire Domiciliary Care Providers Association, said, "The big issue for these providers is the council's prices do not allow adequate pay and allowances for carers, and they are now at a stage where recruitment and retention is a serious issue." He added, "I appreciate councils are under budget pressures, but quality care does not come at bargain basement prices." Mr. Watt said some agencies were paying carers not much above the minimum wage of £6.08 per hour. Before it introduced the new contract, the county paid some 200 companies a wide range of different rates, and council bosses said there did not appear to be any strong link between the prices and quality. Hampshire and Southampton City Council commission 15-minute slots, but other councils have minimum half-hour period. A national report by the Equality and Human Rights Commission last summer found some people had to choose between being washed or fed because visits from home helps are so brief. Totten-based Care Rangers is among the companies Hampshire uses to provide home care to the elderly. Owner Julia Betteridge said, "Lunchtime visits are usually 15 minutes. Carers serve a microwave meal, take the elderly person to the toilet, and prompt them to take medication. It's all down to cost-cutting, and it's happening across the country." However, Councillor Alan Dowden, Liberal Democrat spokesman for adult social care, is calling for county chiefs to extend the minimum period of care. But Hampshire County Council said only 14% of visits it commissioned were 15 minutes, and this figure had not increased on the previous year. Most calls are 30 minutes or longer. The County Council has defended reducing the cost of home care, saying all the independent agencies had been evaluated to determine their suitability and prices factored in training, minimum wage and travel. Councillor Felicity Hindson, Executive Member for Adult Services, denied cuts had put the elderly at risk of neglect. She said the Council's Adult Services Department takes safeguarding very seriously, and as such we have a panel of preferred providers to ensure that the care we commission is of the highest quality. She added, "The new domiciliary care system is set to save £3.2 million by reducing administration and through paying only for care that is actually delivered. It enables us to be sure that users have had a proper visit and will offer reassurance to families.
A Winchester man is cycling 1,000 kilometres to raise money for charity. John Banks, 40, set off on Saturday, June 16th, from his doorstep in Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill, to pedal all the way to Spain. The route will be a real challenge, covering the entire length of France, and is not one of the well-trodden paths, John said. I'm hoping to reach Spain in 9 to 10 days, assuming I don't get lost too many times. If John finds himself struggling during his marathon, he will be able to rely on his family for support, his wife Sarah and 2 children, Daisy, 2, and Ollie, 10 months, will be close at hand in the support vehicle. The money John raises will go to Dream Flight, a charity that supports 192 seriously ill and disabled children, taking them on holidays of a lifetime to Florida. A trip costs £3,500 per child. Inspired by a close friend who has been involved in numerous Dream Flight trips, John has raised £800 so far and hopes to earn more. And with this article, we have a lovely photograph of John and his wife and their names, Daisy and Ollie, and his bicycle, all ready to take off.
Residents urge council to close road. Winchester residents have appealed to the City Council to close their road to through traffic. A temporary 12-month no-entry order into Hyde Church Lane from Worthy Lane was made permanent by Council Committee last week. But residents of Hyde Church Lane asked the Council to stop traffic using the road from Hyde Street due to concerns over the size of the road and the speed of the traffic. Speaking at the meeting, Dr. Karen Parker said, "We feel that there are still issues to be addressed here, and there is still an accident waiting to happen. The top end of the road is wide and the bottom end is narrow. There's a kink in the road which causes a blind spot. Elderly people use the lane for access to the bus and social club, and parents and children use it to get to nursery school, but it's dangerous." She added, "All residents have signed a petition to make the lane access only." Councillor Dominic Hiscock, ward councillor for Hyde, added, "This road is simply not suitable for motorised traffic. There is no room for someone with a walking frame or pushchair or even a bicycle." Traffic officers said they would consider prohibiting traffic from using the lane, but that it would be difficult to enforce. Andy Hickman, head of Access and Infrastructure, said, "We cannot get any guarantee of enforcement at all. A no-entry sign is well respected, but a traffic prohibition sign is ignored far more often. We would have to trust drivers, as the police do not have the resources to check up on it." The Traffic Committee approved the permanent no-entry order and asked officers to bring back a report to the committee on prohibiting all traffic.
Bushfield inquiry postponed. A public inquiry into the future of Winchester Downland has been postponed. The 2-week inquiry was due to start on Monday to decide whether Bushfield Down should be given village green status to protect it against future development. Campaigners Bushfield Down Supporters Group won the right to the inquiry at a preliminary hearing in March, but landowners, the church commissioners, are challenging that decision. Charles Jennings of Bushfield Down Supporters Group said, "The church commissioners are challenging the planning inspector's decision in March, so we do not know when the inquiry will take place. If the challenge fails, it is likely to be towards the end of the year."
For wind farm at Bullington Cross. Environment campaigners in Winchester have backed proposals to build a wind farm north of the city. EDF Energy Renewables wants to build up to 17 turbines each around 125 metres high. around 400 feet, at Bullington Cross near Mitchell Dever, and the company has announced dates to discuss the plans with the public. Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINACC, said the farm would boost efforts to cut carbon emissions. Chris Holloway, director of WINACC, said, "We need to see much more renewable energy generated in Winchester. We need to do something significant to reach the international targets for carbon emission reduction. We would be very happy to see more wind farms in Winchester. In principle, wind is one good way of getting renewable energy going, because the cost of creating the turbines is low. We are not saying you could replace the entire energy needs of the UK only from wind, but it's a good way of creating renewable energy, and it's the right sort of project we would like to see in Winchester. It is estimated the wind farm could save around 32,000 tonnes of CO2 per year, which is around 15% of the 208,000 tonnes the council is trying to cut by 2015. The turbines are likely to be visible for up to 20 miles and could be strongly opposed by countryside campaigners. But Giles Gooding, coordinator of Winchester Friends of the Earth, said the scheme could work if the developers engaged with the surrounding communities. He said, "This does look like a reasonable proposal, but the developers really need to embrace and involve the local community and need to give them something back. There's no benefit to the community unless they get involved. I think wind farms look quite graceful, and I have read articles and research about their sound and effect on birds, but I do not think they have as big an impact as people think." The EDF consultation sessions will be held at Whitchurch Parish Hall on Wednesday, July the 4th, from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. and Thursday, July the 5th, from 12 noon to 7 p.m, featuring images of how the site would look. To book a place at the free conference, email events at winacc.org.uk or call 0196282708 3. I'll say that again. Call 0196282708 3.
City sex attack. A woman was sexually attacked on a major Winchester street early on Saturday. The woman, in her 20s, was walking along Romsey Road at around 3 a.m. when she became aware of a man behind her. He ran at her and, after a struggle, indecently assaulted her, punching her in the face before running off. Inspector Rachel Upfold said, "We'd like to hear from anyone who was travelling along Romsey Road, either on foot or in a vehicle, between 2:30 and 3:30 a.m. Perhaps you noticed the victim. She is 5'4", of small build, with long blonde hair, blue jeans and a black jacket. The man is said to be white, with tanned complexion, in his mid-20s, wearing dark clothing. He had medium-length blonde layered hair and a Roman quite pointed nose. Anyone with information should call Winchester CID on 101 or Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Police dismayed by surge in drink driver numbers. Six people have been arrested in the Winchester and East Hants as part of the police drink drive crackdown launched on June the 1st. Across Hampshire, 107 drivers were stopped for driving with excess alcohol, an 8% rise, 99 arrests on last summer. Superintendent Chris Brown, head of roads policing for Hampshire and Thames Valley, said, These figures come just 17 days into a three-month campaign, so it's bitterly disappointing to already see more than 100 arrests. Of those arrested, 72 have been charged, 24 released with no further action, and 11 bailed pending further inquiries. Officers arrested 91 men and 16 women, with the oldest a 71-year-old man and the youngest an 18-year-old man. Average age was 35.
Clamping ban forces rethink. A Winchester church is considering options to protect its car park following the ban on wheel clamping. Holy Trinity in Upper Brook Street has employed clampers to stop unauthorised parking, but legislation has outlawed the practice on private land, meaning clampers have until October to wind up business before it comes illegal. Churchwarden John Kimber said the church was reminding the public that use of its car park was restricted. Holy Trinity is now considering the best way forward in ensuring our small car park remains accessible for those using the church. The church is in a very popular location, and it is only natural that people will look for somewhere free to park rather than paying. Our duty to our congregations, some of whom are elderly and cannot walk longer distances, is firstly to make sure the general public is aware that the car park is only for use by permit holders and those visiting the church, and to find the best way of doing so which minimises disruption to all. The church confirmed that it no longer employed a clamping company, but declined to say when it terminated dealings with whites.
This is an obituary, and it's an obituary of John Burgess, a Bevan boy who managed three collieries and never forgot his Winchester roots. John Burgess, who died on May the 23rd, was a true Wintonian, although he lived most of his life in Nottinghamshire, working in the coal mining industry. Born at Bar End in 1926, he was educated at All Saints School in Highcliffe and Denmark School. He was also a choir boy at All Saints Church. Leaving school at the age of 14, John was employed by RNAS, that's HMS Ariel, Worthy Down, at that time an engineering training school. He was conscripted to the coal mines in 1944 to be what was known as a Bevan boy, working at Ainslie Colliery Knotts doing menial underground jobs. During his service, he met Joan Newman, a local girl, and they married, and on being demobbed in 1947, he decided to make mining his career. After studying managerial skills of a working colliery, he gained his manager's certificate in 1955, and his first appointment was at Sutton-in-Ashfield Colliery. He eventually rose to the position of area manager of three collieries in the Nottinghamshire coalfield, and is believed to be the only Bevan boy to reach this high position. On retirement in 1986, John and Joan joined the Knotts Caravan Club and travelled the country, staying at many sites, including the one at Mournhill near Winchester. In 1998, John joined the Bevan Boys Association, becoming its chairman in 2000 and remaining in that office until 2009. Local historian Phil Lates, also a Bevan boy, paid tribute. John was a lovely, jovial man who never forgot his roots and often reminisced about the city of his birth. On visits to see his two brothers and three sisters, we'd walk down the high street. He knew more about the city of the 1930s than I did. He also had fond memories of the Theatre Royal in its cinema days. The family lived at Retford Knotts, and he is survived by his widow Joan, son and daughter, and two grandchildren.
A cuppa makes a difference. A cancer charity is hoping a good old-fashioned cuppa will lead to a fundraising boost. Branbridge Park Garden Centre hosted a blooming great tea party to kickstart a series of events for Marie Curie Cancer Care. Every cream tea served during the day raised £1 for the cancer charity. Tea parties are being held in the county both this month and next, and residents are being urged to hold their own event. Community fundraising manager Wendy Savage said, "The money raised by simply popping the kettle on will help more Marie Curie nurses to provide care to patients with terminal cancer and other illnesses in their own homes." And there's a terrific picture here of Wendy with her colleague Sally Sampson. And Wendy is holding a great big plate of scones and cream and jam and stuff. And Sally has got a great big yellow teapot, and she's about to pour a great big cup of tea. And they're in the middle of a field. It looks lovely.
Naturalist criticises meadow management. Hampshire Wildlife Trust looks to have soothed fears over plans for new management of meadows on the edge of Winchester. The Trust has announced it wants to reintroduce cattle grazing on St Faith's Meadow, St Cross, with stock-proof fencing and cut down some 60 trees to improve the habitat for flora and fauna. It held a public meeting in the Hospital of St Cross on Tuesday night and outlined its plans before an audience of around 50 people. Most appeared satisfied with the proposals. Reserves Officer Rachel Remnant said the meadow was an example of land which had been declining in ecological value because of the growth of too many trees and a spread of nettles. She told the Chronicle the Trust had received no complaints about the scheme. Damien Offer, head of landscape and open spaces at the City Council, which owns St Faith's Meadow, said, "We are looking at low-key management. We're not trying to turn it into a bowling green. It will still be rough and tussocky." But last week, naturalists criticised the Trust at the Town Forum over its management of the area. John Cloyne said the Trust had wasted thousands of pounds from City Council grants on St Faith's and St Cross Meadows in St Cross. The Trust wants to cut down 60 trees, including non-native poplar and willow, which are drying the boggy meadow and damaging the ecology. It has been working with the City Council on the site since 2005, and officers propose to lease the site for 10 years to carry out the improvements. But Mr Cloyne, a former City Councillor of Fordington Road, Fulford, told the Town Forum last week, "As a seasoned naturalist, I can see this is a very worthwhile scheme. But £22,000 has been given to the Wildlife Trust since the beginning of this scheme, and most of that has gone down the drain. What has been done there seems to have damaged the site. Shouldn't the Trust be asked to explain how they have spent the money so far?" Local resident Mike Grivens of Clawcentum Road, St Cross, added, "The site should not be under trust control. All I want to see is value for money." Councillor Stephen Godfrey agreed the council should retain a measure of control over the site. He said, "I'm very aware of the importance of this site to the community. I think we must have a mechanism for controlling what happens there." But Mr. Offer said the council should have confidence in the trust. He confirmed there was a break clause in the agreement should the work be unsatisfactory. Environment portfolio holder Councillor Roger Huckstep said Councillor Roger Huckstep will make a final decision following a further report into the site. The St Cross meeting heard that some 97% of water meadows in 1930 had been wrecked by 1984.
Beetles and bugs. A Hampshire Civic store is hosting an exhibition as part of National Insect Week. Bugs, Butterflies and Beetles is running at Chilcombe House, Winchester from June the 20th to July the 1st, providing visitors with the opportunity to see some 100,000 insects and other biology collections. The event, run by Hampshire County Council Arts and Museums Services, offers regular guided tours of a museum store not usually available to the public. Tours require pre-bookings and are suitable for children aged 7 and over. Call Christina Taylor on 01962 826726 for details.
Summer fates beat the bad weather. One of the biggest summer fates in Hampshire overcame a waterlogged field last weekend. Bad weather meant Coldon Common's fate could not be held on the village recreation ground, so it was moved indoors to the community centre instead. Nick Shipley, one of the organisers, said, "It was a complete bog and looked as bad as Glastonbury gets, but nothing was cancelled and everything was moved into the community centre or just outside the building." The fete had previously had around 2,000 visitors, but only around 500 made the event on Saturday, June the 16th. But Mr. Shipley added, "It went very well in the end, and everyone was enjoying themselves. All the village groups were involved, and we had about 20 to 25 volunteers helping set things up. I think we would have got more visitors if we were outside, but it was still a really great turnout." Entertainment included birds of prey, a brass band, Morris dancers, and a bouncy castle. So far, the event raised around £500 for the community centre, while other village groups ran stalls to raise funds for their own causes. Meanwhile, a very unusual political meeting took place at the Avington Midsummer Fete on Sunday, June the 17th. Winchester MP Steve Bryan is used to discussions with government ministers, but might not have expected to meet Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, at Avington Park. But it was actually actor Robert Hardy who played Mr. Fudge in the Harry Potter films. The star regularly opens the fete and stayed around afterwards to sign autographs and congratulate the May Queen, Clementine Stent. He was joined by an official replica of the Olympic torch, which Avington Park owner Sarah Bullen borrowed from a relative who had been one of the torchbearers in the nationwide relay. Around 1,000 people attended the fete, which raised about £8,500 for the St Mary's Church in Avington. An Itchen Valley tradition was restarted at the fete as Martyrworthy residents won the first inter-village tug-of-war since 1912, defeating teams from Easton, Avington and Itchen Abyss.
Parade and service for Jubilee. Hundreds of scouts paraded through Winchester last week for a late Diamond Jubilee celebration. The Hampshire Scouts Queen Elizabeth Diamond Jubilee celebration parade and service took place on Friday, June the 15th, and was led by Dame Mary Fagan, Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire. Around 800 scouts, cubs, beavers and explorers from 26 districts marched through the Broadway along to the cathedral for the service. The new Bishop of Winchester, Right Reverend Tim Dakin, led the service along with the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell. Martin Rudd, County Scout Jubilee Coordinator, said, "It was just a great, happy time for all involved, and we've heard people say that the Bishop's talk was so inspiring. We held it after the official Jubilee weekend because it fitted in with Dame Mary's diary. But we have to remember this is a Jubilee year, so there will be celebrations throughout it. And with this article, we have a lovely picture of a parade of the Scouts with their yellow flags and their attractive green jerseys."
That, I'm afraid, is the end of our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Janet Farthing and Diana Hampton, and thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you to our readers too. Thank you to Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
And thank you to Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye too. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet together with the laminated card when you finish listening. Thank you and goodbye again.